That's probably pretty nasally. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Quasi Indefatigable Xenolith. Every now and then, I just do a recording because I don't think it's of any real interest to the Life Autistic podcast listeners. So, and, you know, you don't want to totally ignore the past. And that's what's destined to happen when you go, you move from one project to another, that you you tend to abandon the old. When I was just thinking about how I tend to do that. When I move from one place to another, I tend to just forget that place. You know, if I had friends there, they're gone, and you know, and I don't worry about them too much. I guess that makes me something of a jerk in most regions, and you know what, that's just life, because that's the way I am. And I feel like trying to do that would be disingenuous, because I would just be doing it because that's supposed to make society feel better, or that other person, I guess, you know. Honestly, it ends up being, well, let me give you a for instance, a family left from here a couple of years ago, and they sent back a little newsletter to our branch, to the group of people at church, and it wasn't just anybody in specific, so I know that it was mostly, you know, I'm sure they're not saying, oh, let's just do this because you're supposed to do it. It's supposed to be done. I've never been a mismanners sort of a person. If it wasn't something that I thought was really helpful to the specific person I was doing it to, and I tend to deal with specific people, not with groups, then I didn't see the reason, the need of doing it, honestly. And I think that's where I come into lots of conflicts with people who do things just because they're supposed to be done, or because they are expected. It's a societal norm or something. I don't tend to behave that way, just because I don't think along those lines. I don't do things because society expects them of me. If that makes me a good person or a bad person, you guys can make your own judgment on that. I don't really care. It's what I do. And sometimes I feel a little bit guilty because, you know, because other people have expectations that you'll be doing this. When we call a big family meeting, everybody in the family's going to show up. And oftentimes I don't. Because, you know, the meeting rarely has anything to do with me. And by and large, I'm just probably going to make people upset, or I'm going to make people feel uncomfortable, or I'm going to bring up things that they don't want to really talk about. So, you know, it really becomes pointless to go. It's mostly for other people. It's not for my benefit, and I wouldn't be benefiting anybody else except that their societal needs will have been filled better. You know, I guess I have that in there. I don't want people to be upset or angry. You didn't show up at this thing. Everybody's supposed to be there. We missed you. And you're going, you know, I don't comprehend that myself. Because I don't miss anybody, but I don't want to say that in public because I know how offensive that is to so many people. And I don't want to say it. So the easiest way to not say something that's going to offend people is not to be there. You know, people say, well, Jay, we're not offended by you. We love you. We care about you. And you go, that's great. You can love me and care about me at a distance. You know, I don't want to offend you. I don't want to embarrass people. Because I often do. You know, they say, well, then Jay, you need to work hard to make sure that when you're in public, you don't embarrass people. And I go, honestly, I think that's a waste of my time and thought, is trying to make a pretense for some societal benefit, because it really doesn't benefit individuals. You know, if they're feeling hurt or mistreated by my absence, then they need to get over it. You know, that becomes the problem of people. People won't be happy until other people do what they're supposed to be doing. It's almost kind of like a weird kind of socially acceptable dictatorial power. If you don't behave the standard fashion, you know, you're hurting other people or you're making them sad. You go, well, then they need to deal with their sadness. And it's not my job to correct their sadness for them. It's their sadness. Own it. Love it. Enjoy it. You know, whatever you're going to do with it. Anyway, that wasn't even what I was going to talk about. It just happened to come up because I remembered this little thing put up on the board, you know. And I said, gee, should I be doing that? And I said, no, Jay, you shouldn't be doing that. You know? There's some people that really say, oh, well, isn't that sweet? Isn't that wonderful? Everybody's just doing great. I'm sure people say, well, that dinner was such a jerk. Boy, when he leaves, you just never hear from him ever again. And you go, so they're not concerned about my happiness. It's more of a selfish wish. And, you know, they need to deal with that. It's not my responsibility to make everybody else happy. I've got enough people to take care of already. I don't need to get weird about all that stuff. They need to be more concerned about that. The primary reason why many people don't seek for happiness and joy is because they feel like that's something that other people should be handing them on a silver platter. You're supposed to provide happiness for me. And, you know, if you don't, you know, that's one of the important doctrines of the gospel, is that happiness is your affair. If you're not happy, you need to do what's required to get yourself happy. Now, I don't mean to the exclusion of all else. You know, you have responsibilities to other people. But you get to choose how you handle those responsibilities. You shouldn't be dictated to by society. God tends to give good advice on this. He doesn't tend to dictate, especially your relations with other people. Although he does say honor your father and your mother. But he doesn't say honor everybody else. He does say love your neighbor, but that doesn't require giving your neighbor whatever they want. Now, when he said walk a mile, you know, if somebody compels you to walk a mile, you need to walk two with them. That doesn't mean that wasn't given as a commandment. That was given as just good, sound advice for keeping your life happy, you know. If you're being compelled to do something, do a little bit extra and maybe they'll leave you alone. At least that's how I interpreted it. Anyway, I turn this thing on to talk about Godsend. I'm trying to get back into Godsend again. Because frankly, it's a better use of my mind than what I had been thinking about. Which was kind of swatted aside. The last Life Autistic episode that I did was mostly an apology for things I had said before on the Life Autistic. Things that probably should have been shoved here into quasi-intergovernmental mentalist, but weren't. And I didn't. It had already been kind of published and put up on the podcast, and it's really no point. Once it's there, and you might as well just live with it. You don't do a retraction, you just continue, especially with the way I do things. So, anyway, what happened to my thing? Oh, there it is. Okay, all right. Just making sure everything's working okay. My little computer has decided it's got a bigger screen than what it really has. So it's behaving strangely. And it's just going to continue to behave strangely. Okay. I'm getting back to Godsend. I think it's a better use of my mind, and it's much more productive than trying to study the ark. I don't want to get smitten by God, so it's probably a good idea to keep my hands off the thing and let other people worry about that. I've got other fish to fry, and that's Godsend. The amount of money that I make for my family is not sufficient for the future. It might be okay now, but it's not keeping up with the rising cost of everything. And we're going to stick with what we've got, I guess, for the near term, until Lisa decides she wants to do something else. And you know, that's just reality. You know, she doesn't have to give up and put up. So, and I'm not going to ask her to, because she'd be doing it mostly for my benefit. I think it would be beneficial all around, but she doesn't agree, so there it is. So let's talk about Godsend for a little bit. I've been waking up early for some days. Now, I've immediately said I'm not getting enough sleep, so I need to go back to sleep, but it does indicate that I probably need to get my body up earlier so that I can... Uh, so that I can go in line or stay up late. One or the other. Probably a little bit of both. Because I have to fit it into my normal job. Excuse me. In the way of goals on this thing, I really do want to do a lot of philosophical stuff in there, and I don't want to bury it. I don't want to do that. I want to just throw it out there. So I'm going to have fun with this book. I've done it the fun way in the past, and I enjoyed it and got a lot further down the road when I did it that way. That means the books are going to be incredibly large, and they're going to be quite interesting. And I was talking to Lisa this morning about the whole concept of field trips. I said, you know, some of the most, you know, I did it in relation to the movie Stardust. We just got Stardust for Christmas from somebody. And it's a fun little movie. It's a cool little movie. I just love it. It's got some cool special effects, but it's also just a kick butt little movie. And the basic storyline is so old, so used, that you'd think, oh, God, not another one of these movies. Yeah. You know, but what makes it interesting are what I call the field trips from the storyline. Stuff that really kind of isn't terribly important, but you shove it in there, and you have a good time with it. And, come on, Jay. I don't know what happened to my mind. My mind's almost went blank there. It's like it went to sleep on me. Yikes. Excuse me. I went out and where's my brain? I can't even speak. I'm thinking about what'll happen when I, you know, when this thing goes. I often do, I daydream about the success of it, which I think is an important part of getting success, is doing a little daydreaming about the success so you're ready for it. And I was saying, how do I want to handle it? Because I really don't want to go on tour with the book. I'm not interested in it. I don't really want I don't really want to be involved in any of that, and I've always thought of what I could do about that. I could do it under a pseudonym so people would leave me alone, you know, but they really do want a face to go out with stuff. That's become part of the thing, is that you need to have junkets and signing parties and yada, yada, yada. And I've thought of just putting Lisa's name down as the author, and when it gets down to it, I don't want to do that. Because that would be disingenuous. And then I thought, wait, I can put both of our names on it, and then Lisa could go on the junkets, because I think she would really enjoy going out and being with people and getting some time away and and making that kind of happen. Of course, I could do it under, like, kind of the corporate name, the Nimro Family Partnership, and just send her out as our propaganda lord. But honestly, I don't think that would make people happy, because it's like, well, I don't want to talk to your assistant. I want to talk to the author. So I really need to name her as an author, and I actually include some of her stuff in it. I can say that she came up with most of the ideas, and I just wrote them down. And that might work pretty good. I might make it work. I mean, she can go and travel, and she can go and enjoy doing all this stuff and have a good time. I think she would enjoy that stuff really good. Stay at some nice hotels. Do things like that. Because, you know what, honestly, she's getting all the money. I'm going to give all, you know. We're a group. If something were to happen to me, I want her to profit off of it. So, yeah, we would have to jointly be the copyright holders of this thing. And, and I would be, there's, you know, the whole concept of what author is ends up being ownership, so I'm basically sharing ownership with her, and it's her job to do the front work. I'll let her do that. Anyway, as to the writing of it, you know, I wanted to go just the Jay schizophrenic way. You know, the best thing to do is to just be you and to be honest and to throw it out there. It was always a story that had a deeper purpose for being. So that's what it ended up being. Now, Lisa's done a lot to form this, because she's the person that tells me no all the time. Don't do this, Jay. Don't do that. You know. And I think I'm going to continue to do that. Let's think about that more. And so she becomes just as much an author of it as I do, even though I'm writing down all the words, because she's got a huge hand in it. Is she my editor? No, because she doesn't like my writing style. So I have the only thing I can give to her. She's a co-author. She didn't write down the words, but she was instrumental in making this thing come to pass. So much so, you know, it really does come from the couple. I couldn't do this without Lisa's help, so she should get just as much credit. And I think when push comes to shove, it's time to start getting accolades and start going around. Let's just send Lisa. She'll be the author that wants to go and speak on these subjects. You know, she'll have to read the thing to say, well, that was what Jay said. I'm worried that when people ask her questions, she'll just say, that's what Jay thinks. So I don't agree with that. I don't even understand what that means. And they'll say, God. But see, you have to just understand, hey, Ann, you don't get these kind of ideas going out and talking to people. You get these ideas, you know, locked up in a cloister, staring at a blank wall. That's how that works. You know, you don't get these podcasts by talking to somebody else on the thing. You get these Life Autistic podcasts based on, you know, Jay's driving down the road with nothing better to do, and he's recording. That's where you get that stuff from. So, anyway. Woohoo! So I'm gonna go the Jay way. I am heartened by the fact that there was a little bit of a controversy when Philip Pullman, when this new movie, The Magic Compass, came out, that was actually based on Philip Pullman's book, The Magic Compass. And I really enjoy his whole series on his dark materials. And because I think he's talking about some truths. I mean, I know they offend mainstream Christianity, but I don't think they offend the truth. They killed God, and you go, well, when you render God down to just being kind of a dictatorial angel, and you kill that person, that concept of God, I don't see a problem with that. Because it really was a very Catholic, Catholic take on it. And, you know, if the Catholic God dies, that's not bothersome to me. I think the Catholic God is practically Satan, you know. Well, it's Christ and God altered, which is satanic by its nature. So you just take that as you wish it to go. And, you know, and the death of that being, it's an imaginary being, who cares? You know, a fallen angel, that sounds like Satan to me. That's what it was, old, decrepit. I remember the character of, it's not really Metatron, it's really more of something else. Of course, the whole legend around Metatron is that he was originally the Enoch. He was Enoch. And I think that's more offensive in calling Enoch this horrible usurper. I think that's kind of the character assassination there. But then, you know, that's another thing where you can say, well, that's the Catholic's take on it. Or that's the mythology mixed with Catholicism. And, you know, honestly, you know, if all those people were to crash and burn, I don't mean the Catholics, I mean all these characters were to ultimately die, that doesn't bother me. I think it's kind of funny they came that his ultimate thing was the Republic of Heaven and how wonderful that was going to be when people were finally free of the strictures of religion. You know, it's really interesting that that's his final take on it, that would be the better thing than what you saw, because that, of course, it's not reality, but then he wasn't really trying to paint reality particularly. He was trying to paint an alternative to what Christianity presents, which is really quite not useful. You know, it really isn't going to make anybody particularly happy. It's not going to bring anybody to the truth, because it's not terribly true. You know, dust is closer. Dust sounds like an analog of the Holy Spirit. You know, and that's what it ultimately is. It's something that is true. And it's leading you and guiding you. That sounds like the Holy Spirit to me. But the truer version of it than the one that most Christians have, where the Holy Ghost really has no purpose. You know, they always think about, well, it's the Spirit of God. You go, well, yeah, but why? And it's like, ooh, well, God's incomprehensible. And you go, oh, well, that's cute. Then what's the point of him telling us about the Spirit of God if it's incomprehensible to us? Just playing little footsie games with the thing. I'm not going to tell you that. Anyway. I liked the book series. Of course, the Christians all went ballistic over it. Oh, it's got horrible morals and horrible ideas. It's just horrible. It attacks the Catholic Church. You know, it attacks the Catholic Church on ground that's worthy to be attacked on. If the Catholic Church can't handle a little bit of criticism for basically what it is, you can say, well, that's what it was, and that's fine. You know, you can say, okay, it's in the past, so don't fret it too much. But it's historical, so it can be talked about, it can be discussed. We shouldn't chop off a ton of history just because it may be a little embarrassing for somebody. You know what? Tough. That's part of the fun of having done something that shouldn't have been done, is that it's gonna continue to haunt you forever. Thank goodness Jesus Christ repented. He doesn't hold you accountable for what you did before. It doesn't mean that it's wiped off, you know, it's wiped off all the tablets of everybody's memory. It means that we shouldn't, if somebody has repented, we shouldn't make their lives miserable over it. But you have to understand, this is an institution. Don't get weird about attacking institutions. They're not people. They're not. So, anyway. Sorry. I went to Philip Pullman's website. And of course, there, this was just right at the very beginning of kind of things about, you know, the attacks on his books and the resultant movie. You know, it wasn't so big to attack his books because not very many people read books. Or not very many people read his books. Enough that he's making a decent living off of it, you know. It won some awards, but that doesn't mean it's well read. Excuse me. You know, this stuff didn't come out until it became kind of a mass media sort of a issue, you know. It takes some reasonable intelligence to want to read a book, and the chances of a lot of people actually getting exposed to this book were quite slim. You know, it sold well, but you know, when you sell 2 million copies in a world of 6 billion people, that means a whole ton of people never really get any exposure to it. So, you know, there's really not much to get weird about for the Christians. But when it becomes a movie where every Tom, Dick, and Harry of whatever intelligence bent they are can go and just kind of mindlessly see it, suck it in like some kind of drug, then that's when the Christians get all bent out of shape. I find it kind of interesting. The Christians would get really upset at this point, and they're going, oh, I see. People need to avoid this because they're stupid schmucks, you know, and movies appeal to stupid schmucks. And don't go see the movie. You shouldn't read the book either. But we knew you never did because you guys are stupid schmucks. So it's really interesting. Now, I'm not saying that they take it that way or they think that way, but it really does kind of bring up the whole subject. But that's kind of how the Christians look at it too, so I have to kind of let that go. You know, they say, well, yeah, you're a Christian too. And I go, well, not a Christian like you are. You know, Christianity means, you know, well, you're going to be good, you're going to think about other people. Where was I reading about that? Was that something that Robert Pease said in one of his articles in Electronic Design? It may have been. He was making a point of how people look at certain words. And that's what the words mean. If you were to look up Christian in a dictionary, it wouldn't necessarily be a follower of Jesus Christ. In fact, it isn't. It usually refers to attributes. And if it's just an attribute type thing, that's fine. Of course, most Christians don't look at it that way. If you want to call me a Christian because I'm tolerant, I do things like this, which is kind of funny because Christians in former days weren't like that. They were very intolerant. That was one of the great charges against Christianity was their past. And, you know, and my family, and most of my, well, no, I can't say most of my family, there's parts of my family that weren't Christian at that time. We were Jewish. And you can say what you want to about Jews. Same way, you know, oh, well, they tend to be skinflinty, they tend to be, they tend to be greedy, you are such a Jew. You know, and you go, well, that ends up being a colloquialism, you know. This is how we use it now. It's not honest, but it's there. What are you going to do? So, yeah. Oh, sorry. I'm not even getting down to the point I'm doing. Anyway, in Philip Pullman's website, and I looked at his biography, and he's answered frequently asked questions that he's kind of grown tired of answering, because everybody always asks the same question over and over and over and over again. You know, book signings and crap like that, stuff you're supposed to go to try to market your book. I don't really want to be like kind of like Tolkien. He just threw it out there and they published it and he never got involved in the process. Because in his day, you didn't. There were no book signings and stuff like that. You know, if you wanted to get an interview with the guy, you would have to make an appointment. Because he wasn't going out and speaking. He wasn't on the lecture circuit. I'm not really sure I want to be particularly. I was only wanting to do it because I thought that would bring in the kind of money I needed to please my wife and, you know, to give her the things that she really wants. And when it gets down to it, anyway, so you have to understand my underlying reasons for why I do things. Do I really want to be a popular person and go out and have people listen to me? Well, I would like the ideas to be listened to. I hope it's not too much of a selfish thing. If it is, I probably shouldn't get on the lecture circuit. So it's probably just as well that I sometimes say, oh, that would really be kind of cool to get on the lecture circuit. Because you want to be treated like you're an intelligent person. But, you know, I really wouldn't want to go through all the normal garbage of it. Which is just, you know, well, do what you want. You know, I make these recordings. If I get famous, you know, if people want to know what I think about a whole lot of things, I've got plenty of material out there to pick from. If you want to call me an anti-Christian, I'm sure you could pull out plenty here to support that. If you wanted to call me, a Jew baiter, who knows what people would want to call me. You know, I'm out there. I'm out there to be had. Of course, commentary people can always take you out of context, and who's going to really go back and say, well, I read what he put down, all 2 trillion hours of it, and it's really great. It's like, well, maybe, probably not. Let me see how much more time I have. I'm on battery power today, so that means that the recording may be a little less than interesting. Still says I have 1 hour and 20 minutes. I went to his site, and he was talking about his method of writing. He writes 3 pages every day, and if that takes him 1 hour, then that's all he works in a day is 1 hour. And and then he spends the rest of his time doing what he wants to do. Because, you know, I didn't used to be able to do that. I've gotten down to this schedule now that I'm reasonably successful. You know, I'm cranking out what needs to be cranked out to keep my fans happy, you know, and he comes up with new things. It can help him get a new audience, but he's got a steady audience that'll read Philip Pullman no matter what happens. Of course, that's not a huge group, but then again, you don't need a huge group. If you're trying to make a living, that's all that's required, is trying to get enough people to pay enough money to keep you okay. Now he's a writer. You know, he writes every day. That's his profession. Mine's not. I don't intend for it to be. I intend to be a one-shot job. I'm going to do Godsend, and that's going to be it. I don't intend on coming up with other stories particularly. Like I was just saying, you know, I might make more money ultimately through the indexes. You know, I think as it goes along, I would follow J.R.R. Tolkien as my as my model. He was never a writer. He did not spend his life and time toiling away on projects and doing things like that. He was a college professor. And, you know, he was a professor of, I think he was a professor of ancient literature. I don't remember. English literature, something along those lines. And, he did that until his death. He didn't decide to stop doing that. Now, at some point, he didn't have to because because he was wealthy and it wasn't required for his livelihood anymore. It would be great to be in that position. I would like to do one thing. Well, it might take years, and it has. I mean, how long have I been working on Godsend and its antecedents, the things that came before it, getting here? Well, since I was 15, so it's been 25 years. I'm not done yet. People say, well, you haven't even gotten a good start on it. You go, well, now on the writing part of it, on the conceptualizing part of it, I've been having it going great guns. You know, wow, I've been going great. Now it's just sitting down actually just kind of writing the stupid thing out. And that's where it comes down to. That's where it comes from, you know. Because, you know, half of writing is the concept of looking around, at least the kind that I do. More the philosophical, learned, whatever, scholarly type of writing. Although this is somewhat fictional, I consider it more of a philosophical text than anything else. You know? But isn't that what fiction is anyway? It's what people think is true. Well, that's what philosophy is. You know, you can say, well, you don't have any proof of that. You go, well, that's for other people to see whether it's got truth or not. That's why it's thrown out there. You know, and you can look at it and you can say, oh, I think it's full of a bunch of hot air. Or you can say, boy, I got some really great insights. You know, it's all kind of a subjective thing. I'm hoping to have truths revealed, but, you know, if I don't, well, I don't. But that's for other people to decide. I'm trying to go for what I think the truth is. That might not jive with either the truth or with what other people think the truth is. Anyway, so, you know, and I said, well, you know, just have fun with it. Have fun just poking holes and stuff. Take a lot of field trips. Philip Pullman said he writes books that he enjoys because he seems to have found an audience of a lot of people who enjoy the same stuff he does. And therefore, that's his audience. And he is far enough along that he gets to his publisher. He understands the reality of the publishing field. And, you know, and it sounds like he doesn't get involved with it much. He says, I send it off, my editor sends back changes he thinks I should make. I either agree or disagree, and we finally come to a compromise, and once that job is done, then it gets published, and people buy it. You know, it's not difficult. You know, I was reading, who was it, Sam Prophet? Sam whoever? He's got a YouTube channel. He's been trying to get himself published. He wrote this novel. He's trying to get his novel published, and that's great and wonderful. And, you know, and I'm sure that when he originally started doing his little video recordings, that it was predominantly to try to get his book out there, get some buzz on it. Not a bad idea at all. You know, I'm giving that kind of a shot, too. Am I really getting together kind of a thing? I would just as soon be a person who has a little bit of a following. And then you say, oh, he's got a book, and then your following will probably want to, you know, buy the book. That at least puts down several people, you know, that says, okay, publisher, I've got commitments from this many people saying that they want to buy a book. In fact, they've already thrown, you know, $25 at it to make it happen, a piece, you know, and they're each going to get a book, you know, at least the first book. And, you know, and that's not a bad idea, because then that all definitely tells the publisher, hey, wait, just for what little he did, he's already got himself a following. Can we get more of them? You know, can we take his couple of thousand people and turn that into a couple of million? Yeah, give it a shot. You never know. You know, you can find some way to make it worth that publisher's while. You know, you go, well, it's totally unknown. First book, totally unknown. You know, and they tend to not like taking risks with unknowns unless it's just really amazing stuff. And I intend on doing really amazing stuff. But that's just because that's what I intend to do. You know, is it formula stuff? No. But then again, formula stuff, it almost becomes a genre to itself, you know. There's people that like to just read murder mysteries. You know, they all happen to kind of be the same. You know, it's just like I was saying at the very beginning, you know, with Stardust. It was a very, you know, it's a very form film. I mean, you could probably name off 100 books and 50 movies that basically have the exact same plot line that Stardust was. What made it fun and what made it interesting and different were the field trips that got made. And I intend on having field trips in my book. That, you know, but they're more of the philosophical kind, you know. Let's go on those field trips. People who listen to The Life Autistic are going to listen to it because they like that kind of challenging sort of philosophical play. And that's what I do. It's philosophical play. You play with these ideas. Well, what do you think? Do you think this would work? It seems to work as well as anything else does. And I like that. I like Douglas Adams because he really doesn't end up having a storyline. I mean, sort of. But his books are so much more about the field trips, at least his Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was. Dirk Gently was much more mystery, twisty mysteries. You know, it was, if you were to take the mystery genre and try to stick a little bit of Douglas Adams in it, that's what you got. Douglas Adams' version of a mystery. You know, and it's a little bit interesting, but it never really went very far. He only did 2 Dirk Gently books. And he was always wondering, well, should, he was coming up with his next book, and he was wondering, should it be a Dirk Gently one? Or should he, or should it be the 6th Hitchhiker's Guide, because he was unhappy with how the 6th one ended. And he wanted to say, well, that's, you know, because there were 2 different ways of doing it, you know, of writing, 2 different writing styles he was playing with. And that's what ends up being play. You play with it. Now, you've got to be engaging, you've got to be interesting, you've got to be all the things that get you published, but if it ends up being anything besides play, I think you kind of lose it. And that's why I say, you know, I really don't want to be a writer. You know, I don't want people to say, ooh, I'm just wondering what Jay's next book is going to be. And it's like, you know what, I really want this to be my life, my magnum opus. Now, I may add to it over time, you know, I may grab more stories because it's about the lives of people and their relationship to God, their relationship to things around them, and there's no end of possibilities there, and you just put them in that setting, and you put them in the setting of First Home, or the land around there, or the outside, and all of a sudden becomes a godsend book or something. You know, sprinkle a little Venus in there to make it just a little interesting. That you're not just dealing with normal people. You're dealing with people that are essentially very different. And that's me. You know, sure, these things are going to be autobiographical. It's intended. You know, I want to do something interesting, but I also want to do something I know about. So might as well make it a little bit autobiographical. But in a fun way. You know, you want to make all this stuff work. I don't mean having them put in funny situations particularly, because that's not the kind of funny I have. You know, I get on like Techie Talk, for instance, which is the web-based conferencing. It's web-based conferencing software it's done on, but it actually just ends up being kind of a radio show of sorts, with, you know, a couple of little graphics on. I guess you could make it into a podcast, and it would probably be just as good. And, you know, people say, oh, Jay, you're just so entertaining, just so fun to listen to and funny. And I'm going, I never intend to be that way, so I'm just going to stick with that. I'm not intending to be funny, but if people go, it was just a riot. It was just fun. I want my book to be as much like the recordings that people find fun and interesting and engaging as they can be, because I think those things are going to sell. I'm interested to think, hey, is Jay just going to sell as a writer? Is that going to work? I get a shot. Why not? Why not have fun? And do it so it's fun for me. You know, because I'm the one that's got to sit there and write this stuff. It's going to be interesting for other people. Well, that's not very fun at all. I'm going here. I'm checking how my power's doing on my little one of my mini pom-tops. I tend to write on my... Well, I tend to write a lot of settings, honestly, whenever things come to mind, but it's usually, I don't want to do it during work time, because then there would be some question as to whether I was wasting whether work deserved a piece of it, and I don't want them to have a piece of it. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot to it, therefore, you know, I want to keep it myself. So, anyway. That's kind of where I stand there. You know, I don't... Just in case there's not a big piece of the pie, I'd just as soon get the whole pie, even if it's a rather small one. You know, I don't want other people saying, well, you did that on company time, therefore it belongs to the company, and you don't get any of it. And it's like, well, that just sucks. Why did I bother doing it? So, I'm not going to do that. So I have to do it during my off time. I don't have a ton of that. I have to end up doing it early in the morning or late at night, one or the other. I guess if I'm going to be doing something, I really do want to honor God doing this. And I know you guys kind of think, well, what does he have to do with God? Well, God blesses me, and God helps me, so I want to get as much help as I can. And his advice is, you know, go to sleep early, wake up early. And you go, okay, well, I'll just go to sleep early, and I'll wake up early. My family already goes to sleep pretty early anyway. We're usually in bed by 9 o'clock. And I don't think we can push it any earlier, particularly. So I'll go to bed at 9, you know, I guess I'll wake up about 3. And I'll write until about 5. And see, that's only 2 hours a day, so you really have to crank it out. So it really has to be something that's engaging and fun for me to try to make it work. If it ends up being a drudgery, I'm not going to do it. That's, I think, what it ended up being after a while, was I just didn't like it. I didn't like it. I wasn't having fun, so I would just kind of throw it to the side. And I need to make it fun for me so that it'll get completed. It'll be done. And I'm thinking that I need to go ahead and put Lisa down as a co-author. And I want to send her out in the junkets because I think she'll like them. I think she'll enjoy them. You know? I mean, it's really heady stuff to have people, you know, to have people people do that. I think we're that we need to be a good pair, but we need to, you know, split up the work like we usually do. I would just as soon be the housekeeper anyway, to take care of most of the stuff that Lisa spends her time doing. You know, she's going to have to read my book a couple of times. She can say, oh, I didn't really like how that went. I didn't really like how that went. Or how that went. I don't like how that, you know, that was Jay's take on that. And you go, why don't you just say that this is Jay's take on a lot of things? And you go, yeah, yeah. But I was the one that helped him with the basic story that we were going to write. So that's what I want to do, because I want to send her on the junkets. I want to send her on the book signings to go and see people and meet people and have them say, oh, I just love you. I love your book. And you go, thank you. Of course, she'll have to deal with, you know, the weird, interesting people that are going to be attracted by this book. But they can just go, boy, I'm just amazed by mine. Maybe she'll get a better outlook on me. Sometimes I can be really frustrating to live with. And maybe when she goes, Kai, I can't believe how many people just love Jay, love his mind. And, wow, he really is an amazing person. Maybe that'll help us. I don't know. I'm sure my battery time wanes horribly. And I think I've talked quite enough on this subject. This is quasi-indefatigable Zebulus. If you're listening to this, you already know where to get it. There's no point in talking about it. If you want to make comments, of course, I mean, you can do it as if it's the Life Autistic. Just tell me that you've been listening to Quasi-Indefatigable Zenlith instead. On Autism, you know how to spell autism, at quix.us. And let me get my pointer going here. There we go. Oops, let's go up a little bit to the thing. 1 hour, not bad. This is Jay Nemro. Have a great day.